This talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonabacher at Zen Mountain Monastery. Gokhan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from Dogen's Mountains and Water Sutra. In general, the way of seeing mountains and waters differs according to the type of being that sees them. In seeing water, there are beings who see it as a jeweled necklace. This does not mean, however, that they see a jeweled necklace as water. How then do we see what they consider water? Their jeweled necklace is what we see as water. Some see water as miraculous flowers, though it does not follow that they use flowers as water. Hungry ghosts see water as raging flames or as pus and blood. Dragons and fish see it as a palace or a tower, or as the seven treasures or the Mani gem. Others see it as woods and walls, or as the Dharma nature of immaculate liberation, or as the true human body, or as the physical form and mental nature. Humans see these as water. I've always kind of loved this passage from Dogen, even when I don't really understand it. And I've always wondered at the way that he emphasizes this point of there being different perspectives. It's been a question for me. He speaks about this in some of his other fascicles. Why does he keep pointing this out? Why is this important? And I appreciate the mystery of Dogen in general, but particularly in this passage. Who are these beings that he's talking about? Where are they? Where are these worlds that they are in? Are these beings parts of us? I feel like Dogen can remind us that our lives, our practice, is not something to figure out. There's a place for that. It can be helpful to figure things out, to figure out what we're doing. But also just to appreciate that we are mysterious, mystical beings. And so in learning to work with ourselves, we can allow that as well. Allow ourselves to work with ourselves without understanding everything in our logical way of understanding. I've been reading a recently published commentary on this Mountains and Rivers or Mountains and Water Sutra by Okamura Roshi. And around this passage, he says, depending on the conditions of our body and mind and circumstances, we create different views. Every one of these is just a view created by our karma. Therefore, it is limited and conditioned. We can't have a view that is not conditioned because we are inside the world, and to see it, we have to take a position. Our view is always only our view. And so our view is always a conditioned view. And so the teachings say that there, and I think we can have experience of this, that there is direct perception when our senses are fully functioning. But I've seen in some of the early teachings that someone figured out somehow that in 1/62nd of a finger snap, after direct perception, all of our conditioning, all of our past experience, our past way of understanding rushes in and informs our experience. And so whatever sensation we see, a flower, we have a bite of food, and there is that perception, that sensation, and then there is all of our conditioning that comes in and informs that experience. And Okamura Roshi, in talking about those, this was helpful to me. He makes a distinction. He says the Dogen is making a distinction between what is our personal experience, our personal conditioning, and the conditioning that is more circumstance, our circumstances. And so maybe we could understand that as our conditioning, our personal conditioning, and our socialization. Things that are more shared, depending on our particular socialization. He speaks about this from his experience as being a Japanese Zen teacher who grew up in Japan just after World War II, and then has spent most of his life in the United States teaching American students, seeing the differences in their conditioning, socialization. And most of the time, we don't see this. We don't see that our conditioning is always in play. It's always happening. I think that we can study this. We can see at least some of it, study its effect. But we can't sort of help it, right? It happens. And I think that it's not necessarily good or bad. That's not the point. It's to be aware of it. It's to know that our view is always a conditioned view. And to know, of course, that I have a conditioned view that is my conditioned view, and you have a conditioned view that is your conditioned view. We all do, and we're each in the middle of our own world. And so this is really helpful, important to know, to acknowledge, to study. How do we even see this? Right? When it's our view, it's our understanding of our world, of our self, of our experience, is our conditioned view. How can we even see that that is conditioned? We experience it simply as the way things are, as reality. And we forget in our own view that there are other views. We continually forget this. Kind of fall back into our own world, our own view. How do we see this? I was remembering the first few years that, or months, I can't really, that Shoen and I were together. And kind of for the first time, we would be deciding what to do or, you know, how to do something or where to go. And it would just seem clear to me that, like, well, this is the way that we should do. And it was kind of a shock to have her have a completely different view of even very simple things. And I think there was a way in which, because I was so in love and because she is the way she is, that I was forced for the first time to see that it's not just the way I think it is. It's not just what I assume. I was talking to someone recently about practice and relationships and saying to her that, you know, there's a way in which I have learned more or as much, I mean, how to quantify it, but from being in a relationship as I have from practice. I've opened, changed, And she was incredulous. It was not what she wanted to hear. And I was thinking about that. We had a family's retreat here, and a lot of kids and parents, and thinking that that must be so with having kids, that must completely open things. And so this is why we practice together. We, without even trying, can show each other, can see from being with others that our view is just our view. And this can be hard and uncomfortable and painful to see, to experience. And we keep falling back into our own view. And so we can't, or maybe this reminds us, we can't separate just our life, our experience from practice, or practice from life. We're in the midst of our life and practicing. And so what are we practicing? In that conversation that I was having about practice and relationships, we're also sort of talking about the disappointment and grief of realizing that you can't, that these are not the practice, you can't get away from your life through practice. That's not what happens. It doesn't take us out of our life or take us out of who we are. It doesn't make us a different person. In the Mountains and Waters Sutra and the commentary that I've been reading on it, it talks about stepping back and stepping forward. Stepping back and stepping forward. And so we step back to study the self. This is Zazen, this is the backward step that Dogen points out, tells us about. Turn into ourselves to experience ourselves and to experience our true self, to experience our completeness that is not anywhere else. And there is stepping forward. There is stepping forward to meet all of the things, to meet the world, turning out and encountering. And turning out not in distraction, not in desire, not in irritation. Learning to turn out without going anywhere. I think this is a place where we get confused, or is a challenging place of practice. What does that mean? What is this turning out, turning in, learning to do both of those things, to find completeness in both turning out and turning in? And how some of us, or at times, we want it all to be turning in, to be quiet, to be not as complicated, not as difficult. But that this can be turning away rather than turning in into our life. And so we have to cultivate and practice both of these, learn both of these. How do we do these? How do we step back in a way that we really truly encounter ourselves? And how do we step forward in a way that we encounter wholly? Let this constantly be a study, a practice. Last week, during one of the caretakings, I was pruning the raspberries up in the orchard, sticking my kind of crawling in under the bushes to cut out the canes, the stalks that had produced fruit this summer. You cut out the previous year's stalks so that the next year's stalks, the stalks that are the canes that have come up this summer, they'll produce fruit next summer. And this allows all the energy to go to those new canes. And it's pretty obvious which is which. So the ones that are have already produced from that are older are dark and hard and kind of tough. And this year's canes are pale green and robust, growing, supple. And I had just given instruction that morning on how to do caretaking, how to do work practice, to give all of your awareness to just what you're doing, whatever it is, to see when you're distracted, and to bring yourself back to just what you're doing, to just what's in front of you. And so sticking my head in there under the bushes, there's a whole world in there. It's damp. It's shady. The leaves are thick, so not much light gets down underneath. The earth is moist. There are these little shiny centipede-like bugs that I seemed to be part of that particular world. And the new canes pushing up, some of them broken already, turning dark above where they'd broken. And all of this allowing me to enter that world, to see it's the whole world in there, and to get to know the raspberries as I touched them and took care of them. No need to think about what I was doing. And seeing my mind. There was a line of a song that was in my mind, kept coming up. I'd see it, I'd let it go, come back. And then after a while, I realized it was taking longer than I thought it was going to take. And I started to worry that I needed to get down to the office, that I should at least put in an appearance before lunch. And seeing how these thoughts took me away a little bit. Away to where? And coming back and seeing the whole world is right there under those bushes with me. And then going down to the office and sitting down in front of my computer, and then where is that? Recently and periodically, I hear Shugen Roshi saying that we're always practicing something. So whether we really are conscious of it or not, and from the very beginning of our consciousness, we've been practicing something. And I've, wonder at this sometimes. What is that? What is he saying? And I think his point is simply that we're always creating. We're always creating habit, creating karma with what we do with our mind. And deepening it. Much of what we do, much of our reaction to our world is our reactions to things not being the way we want them to be. They're natural, kind of rational responses to discomfort, to pain. Ways to get away. And so there's a way in which those reactions are all practicing something, developing something. And then when we start to look at that a little bit closely, more closely, we see some of those habits are not actually serving us. They may seem to be getting us away from what's uncomfortable or giving us some pleasure, but they don't bring us closer to what is true. And so they are actually not bringing satisfaction. And in all of these ways that we practice our habitual responses, so when I respond with self-righteous irritation, I'm cultivating that. Sometimes I hear when I say something, I hear my father in me, and I know that he started this long before I did and cultivated it. And I learned it and I have cultivated it further. Some things run deep in us. And so when we sit down to do zazen and we turn to our favorite distraction again, we're deepening that rut, that habit. When we sit down and we go to sleep during zazen, we're not only missing this precious time, but deepening that habit, making it more likely that next time we'll sit down and go in the same place. And so it matters what we do with our mind. It matters for us and it matters for others. In a conversation recently with someone who, and that was really sort of showing me this, he was had been practicing with some diligence and practicing in a particular way that was not helping. And he had some awareness of it, but he had a view around it, and he was kind of determined, right, to continue practicing in this way because he was so convinced of his view that eventually it would help, it would turn, despite what others were, the teachings were telling him, what other people were telling him. And it seemed like the main thing, he was kind of checking out and dissociating, thinking that that was where he wanted to be in his mind, where he should be going in his mind. And in talking to him, I shared my experience of that. Years ago, someone pointed out to me, said, "I think you're dissociating. I thought I was thinking. I thought I was like considering my response." She was like, "Where'd you go? Where are you?" And it was really helpful to have that pointed out. I was ready to hear that, apparently, because then I was able to start to see, oh, I do that a lot. I've been doing this for a long time. And to start to be able to use practice to actually come back into my actual experience, to come back into my body, to practice not checking out, not leaving, not using this way that I had learned to kind of just leave my life, to escape. And I certainly had been practicing that during zazen because we bring our habits to zazen. And so I was working on this talk, I was like, I probably still do that, right? So it's a place to look. Our habits, even as we work on them, as we loosen them, as we, they just get more subtle. So they require more attention, closer attention. You know, we talk about a habit as sort of a rut. And so I was thinking about, you know, like if you've ever been in a car on a really rutted road and the car just wants to stay in the rut, and it takes, you have to like really like pull the wheel to get out of that rut. But I'm not sure that I actually like that analogy. Like, I'm not sure that I know that experience in my body, mind, of how to like just turn something like that. And so I was thinking about turning a big ship. My uncle used to work on oil tankers, and they're so big and they have so much mass that you have to start turning them like a mile ahead of where you're going to go, where you want to go. And turning them just a little bit makes a huge, by the time you get there, has made a big difference. The Buddha talked about training or cultivating our mind. Cultivating takes patience, perseverance, and, you know, cultivating, trying to grow something. Bugs come and eat it. The weather changes. The season changes. Things come along. And you keep cultivating. You keep coming back. So it matters what we do with our mind. For us, for ourselves, and for others. So I wanted to end with the Kalama Sutra, which I kind of stumbled back upon and as I was working on this. The Kalama Sutra is a story of this town, I guess, of Kesaputra. And the Buddha visited this town, and people came out and met him. And, you know, it seems that in the Buddha's time, he had a bit of a reputation that he developed over time. But he also was just one of a lot of different wandering ascetics, teachers. And so the Kalamas came and met with the Buddha, and they said, you know, all of these teachers come through here, and each one teaches something a little bit different. And they all criticize the teacher that came before and say, you know, my teaching is the correct teaching, and that's not the correct teaching, which you heard last week. And so they said to the Buddha, you know, we're confused. And he said, yeah, that's understandable that you'd be confused. And then he says, but come, Kalamas. He says, do not go by oral tradition, by lineage of teaching, by hearsay, by a collection of scriptures, by logical reasoning, by inferential reasoning, by reasoned cogitation, by the acceptance of a view after pondering it, by the seeming competence of a speaker, or because you think the ascetic is our guru, this is our teacher. But when you know for yourself these things are wholesome, these things are blameworthy, these things are censured by the wise, these things, if accepted and undertaken, lead to harm and suffering, then you should abandon these things when you know for yourself. He says, when you know for yourself these things are wholesome, these things are blameless, these things are praised by the wise, these things, if accepted and undertaken, lead to welfare and happiness, then you should live in accordance with them. When you know for yourself. Wherever we are on our path, whatever our vision allows us to see, we know from that place what is wholesome, what is helpful, what is not. Whatever you know for yourself, knowing what is good for yourself and what is good for others, then follow that, do that. This is taking responsibility, knowing for ourselves, and then acting on what we know, turning the ship. And the more that we pay attention, the more that we know our own mind, study our own experience, the more we know for ourselves. And so I've been looking at this in myself. What is it to take responsibility as it is when it is subtle, when nobody else knows? Feeling how it's all on me. Nobody else is in my mind. And how it touches, how it moves out, how it touches everyone. And so in this sutra the Buddha is talking about, he says, he's talking about greed, about anger, about ignorance. So including the ignorance of not seeing that our view is just a view, or forgetting that our view is just a view, ignoring that fact, and seeing, the more we understand, the more responsibility we have in this world of ourself, where it is just us, just me and me. It's just you and you. Where only you can take responsibility, only I can take responsibility. Dada Roshi used to say, please take care of it. Because only we can take care of it. Only I can take care of it. And the whole world needs us to do that, to take care of it.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.